From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
I'm from Redwood City, so I guess that's in the peninsula.
Coming up, we check in with Youth Radio's reporters on the ground at the Republican National Convention.
This whole trip has pretty much made me more politically aware. So I hope to be able to at least share the Republican argument when I come home.
Then we'll go back to a senior center that closed during the recession but has now reopened.
It took 20 years to build this home. It's not going to just be able to be picked up and moved. It won't be the same.
And we'll take a swing through music that's pure Tejano in California.
Me!
We're stomping our feet today on Cross Currents. Stay tuned. In case you hadn't noticed, the Republican National Convention is well underway.
Instead of managing American decline, leaving allies to doubt us and adversaries to test us, we will act in the conviction that the United States is still the greatest force for peace and liberty that this world has ever known.
Oakland's Youth Radio has reporters on the ground at the RNC. Brandon McFarland spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney.
Tell me, how has this experience been for you so far?
It's been pretty eye-opening, man. I'm not really a political guy. You know, I'm coming from the Bay Area, which is probably one of the most liberal places in America.
The San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah, the San Francisco Bay Area. I realize that I'm in the other Bay Area right now, Tampa Bay. But, you know, where I'm from, you know, we're conditioned to have a lot of, you know, stereotypical expectations of Republicans. And some of those were true, the citizens of Tampa proved to be, you know, an eclectic folk.
So I can imagine some of the preconceptions you might have had. I mean, we do live in a pretty blue bubble here in the Bay Area. But what are some of the things that have surprised you then about meeting young Republicans and Republicans in general out there in Tampa Bay?
Well, our reporter, Robin G, actually covered a lot of young conservatives around the area about Paul Ryan. And they were all like, you know, really excited about Paul Ryan and specifically the fiscal spending plan that he's laid out, which, you know, to me was a surprise because, you know, he's the youngest candidate, but he's also a number cruncher. So I thought the P90X thing and him being young would be more of a draw.
Yeah, the P90X, that's his fitness routine.
Yeah. And so I thought that would, you know, that he'd just be kind of like a superstar out here. But they're really concerned about, you know, the college loans and, you know, Medicare and stuff like that.
Last night, the big event at the Republican National Convention was Vice Presidential Candidate Ryan speaking. Let's go ahead and hear a clip of one of the parts that really galvanized the audience.
College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life.
That was Vice Presidential Candidate Paul Ryan, and he spoke last night at the Republican National Convention. Tonight, it's going to be Mitt Romney. You, Brandon McFarland from Youth Radio, you've been talking with people inside and outside the convention. What are some of the people talking about? What have been some of the key issues that you found there in the Tampa Bay area?
Every young person we talk to had kind of like memorized the candidates' talking points, and they're just regurgitating them, you know, and they wanted to be on camera to do so. They were happy to do so. But, you know, when it came to like challenging them on issues, you know, they pretty much stuck to what you would hear, you know, what you would hear the candidates say.
So tonight you're going to go see Romney speak inside the Republican National Convention. What are you expecting?
I'm expecting to just feel the energy, and I don't know whether this is going to be positive or negative. I heard that there was some deplorable kind of racist things going on, throwing peanuts at an African-American woman, camera woman, and so that wasn't cool at all.
People at the convention, people on the floor, were throwing peanuts at somebody from
at a reporter, at a black reporter, and so, you know, I'm coming into it kind of with my guards up and with my supervisor on speed dial.
Because you're a young black reporter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm not safe, but I do want to experience it. I want to be proven wrong, honestly. This whole trip has pretty much made me more politically aware. So I hope to be able to at least share the Republican argument when I come home.
Brandon McFarland is a reporter with Youth Radio. Find links to more Youth Radio election coverage on our website. It's kalw.org. And if you're following the convention, we'd like to know what you like or dislike about it. Call our feedback line at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and leave us a message. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. One of the biggest issues in the presidential campaign is the economy and how well it is or isn't recovering. The recession hit many Bay Area cities hard, including the city of Newark in southern Alameda County. At the end of January 2010, dozens of employees were laid off or lost hours, and all but the most essential city services were cut. One of the casualties of Newark's budget crunch was its decades-old senior center. Reporter Shalise Haas was there on the center's closing day and brings us this story from our archives.
At the Newark Senior Center, five men huddle around a card table. Angel Torres plays his hand, then tucks into a bowl of vanilla ice cream, topped with maraschino cherries.
Right now we're playing pinochle. We're playing what they call double-deck pinochle, and sometimes we play five-handed. Right now we're playing four-handed partners.
Most of these men have been playing pinochle together for years. Same table, same cards, same conversations. But today is a little different.
I'm here enjoying myself for one of the last times and one of the best senior centers around.
In just a few hours, the center will close its doors indefinitely. To mark the occasion, more than 100 seniors have gathered in the dining hall, where volunteers have laid out plates of cake, potato salad, and deviled eggs. They're here to say goodbye to the center, which is where they spend their days, and the staff, whom they consider family. 62-year-old Jean Lovejoy stands and addresses the group.
Before I came here, I slept all the time. And one day my grandson said, "Grandma, we got to get you out of the house. You got to get out of bed." And I said, "But there's nothing to get out of bed for." And he brought me here. And I found Kelly and Cheryl and Margaret. And let me tell you, this building will always mean a lot to me for that reason. This is my home, and I love each and every one of you, and I want you to know that.
The Newark Senior Center has been around for two decades, and 3 years ago, no one could have predicted it would close. In 2007, the city spent $800,000 expanding the building to make more room for the nearly 150 seniors who visit it every day. But these days, money is harder to come by.
It's a bit of a depressing day here in Newark.
John Becker is Newark city manager. He says 5 years ago, the city started suffering financially. The auto center lost dealerships, hotel rooms stayed vacant, and the owner of the local mall filed for bankruptcy.
I think we're probably worse off than most cities. Everybody is hurting, but Newark actually has been hurting for the longest period of time. And then this latest recession has really put us near the edge.
In November, in an attempt to raise revenue, the city placed a utility tax proposal on the ballot. It failed by just 10 votes. So Newark was forced to shrink its police force, forego street maintenance, and let the grass in neighborhood parks die. Half of the recreation department was let go. To decide how the city was going to cut nearly 10% of its already tight budget, the city council held a series of budget meetings.
I would say of all the things that we discussed, from public safety to public works, the senior center attracted the most attention. And that's why I would say that was probably one of the most difficult decisions that the city council had to make.
So they didn't make it. They decided they couldn't shut the center down completely. Instead, they found the seniors a new home in an unlikely place, a place where no one's heard of pinochle.
Triple team me for the whole game.
It doesn't matter.
And I still won.
On Monday, the seniors will move in here to a space one-third the size of their current home. It's a teen center with a Wii console and a foosball table. Twilight movie posters line the walls. The seniors will be here during the day, and the teens will take over at 3 o'clock. 11-year-old Chris is in the computer lab updating his MySpace page.
What do you think about the fact that you're going to be sharing your space with some seniors coming up here pretty soon?
It's okay, but they're going to be here after we go, so they don't really spoil any of our time here. They're going to change the posters.
What do you think they're going to put up on the walls?
Oatmeal.
Back at the senior center, Cheryl Galvez is preparing for the move. She's currently the center admin, and she'll join the seniors in the new location, but with a 25% reduction in hours.
I think it's going to be challenging space-wise, staffing-wise, resource-wise. It's just going to be a big change.
Galvez says she's grateful the program will continue, but she worries that some of the seniors simply won't make the transition.
And there's people that come in and say, well, I'm not going over there, I'm not going to, and it's so hard for us because we know what will happen if they don't. It's the reason why a lot of these people get out each day. So it took 20 years to build this home. It's not going to just be able to be picked up and moved. It won't be the same.
When she's finished here today and all the seniors have gone home, Galvez will prepare the building for what the city calls mothballing. The furniture and equipment will stay inside. The lights and heat will be turned off, and the doors will be locked. Then the senior center building will sit empty, unless and until the city has the money to open it up again. Reporting in Newark, I'm Shalise Haas for Cross Currents.
Well, we have some good news to report. Last July, the Newark Senior Center reopened, and the activities are in full swing. Earlier this week, I swung by the center on a warm morning, just in time to catch a game of bocce ball on the outside lawn.
Oh, he's good. Yeah.
My name is Kelly Hess. I'm a recreation coordinator for the City of Newark Senior Center.
What are you playing?
Bocce ball. We're playing bocce ball on the grass. Our version of grass bocce ball, and we're kind of new to it, so I'm sure I'll get a lot of things wrong, but you throw a little tiny ball on a court, it's called the Polino, and we try to get our balls as closest to it as we can, and whoever comes the closest is the winner of that round.
Hi, my name is Noel, and I belong here, it's very nice, and now we start to play bocce ball, and it's all kind of different rules, but here, since we're not that many people, we just play three against three. We don't switch, but it's fun and it's exercise.
And how do you feel about the reopening of the center?
The reopening, that's really nice. And even I'm old, I don't understand computer too much, but I go to classes to learn computer.
I'll let you play now.
You want to try?
Oh, my gosh. So you want me to try?
Yeah.
I'm holding the red, heavy, the ball, heavy.
Just try to be closer to the flag.
Try to throw it points. As close yeah. to the flag. Yeah. All right.
Wow.
Yeah.
First ball, first one.
Good job. That's cheating. We're totally cheating. I'm not a member of the senior center.
My name is Vivian Soriano. I love it. Yeah, and then she has more activity now. Yeah. Bingo, bocce ball, and watch movie on Monday. Yeah, it's great.
My name is Juanita Betts. I come for lunch every day. On Mondays, we watch movies. They have free movies. And then Thursdays, we have bingo, but I don't play bingo.
I got 12 already.
My name is Betty Francis. I'm 72. I have great-grandchildren, great-grandchildren, big family.
Oh, we felt everybody was just so happy to come back. Yep. It was a real big for us. That the city thought enough of the seniors to get the money and reopen it was a big, really big for us. Mm-hmm. I take bridge lessons, play canasta, circle of friends, needlework group. Now that I've retired and I lost my husband a few years ago, and so I think it's sort of gives my children a good feeling too that I have some place to go that's safe and to be able to do things and keep living, keep doing things, you know. Yeah.
Those are the members of the newly reopened Newark Senior Center. And if you'd like to volunteer at the center, we'll show you how at klw.org. And we'd like to hear the good news in your neighborhood. Has anything reopened? Post on our Facebook page. It's KALW News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. The issue of same-sex marriage is expected to come up at both political conventions. In this conversation, 20-year-old Emily McGranachan talks about marriage and divorce when your parents are the same gender.
My parents actually split up when I was 14, the year that marriage became the big issue, 2004, in Massachusetts. So while they were getting the right to marry, they weren't in a relationship with anybody. So that is how that factored in. But I think, especially with having Grace, who was my mom's partner for many years, and then I was born, she was another parent of mine until I was four, and then for a long time I did every other weekend seeing her and sleeping over at her place. But it's never, and then when my parents, my mother, Kathy, and Nancy broke up when I was 14, it's never seen on the same stage as a divorce. Even in my family, nobody else in the extended family has ever seen that, I think, as a divorce. But especially when I was four, I reacted the way that a child would when their parents got divorced. I think I, you know, rejected Nancy for a while, and I had a hard time socializing, and I became really disobedient when my mom and I were amongst other people, and there was a year when it was just my mom and I. And so all those things happened, and I don't think anybody in the family has ever seen it like that. And it wasn't really until I was able to talk about it that I sort of realized that it really kind of validated what had happened. I think it's kind of interesting, at least with myself and other people who have LGBTQ parents, and myself being straight identified. I think it's hard for people to understand that this is really for me too, that even though it's not my right to marry because I already, like, it's taken for granted, I already have it, that it's my parents. And I think there is something unique about not just being an advocate for yourself, but for your parents. And because that's not typical of kids. You know, it's usually the parent advocating on behalf of their child, and it's their rights that are so critical to mine. And I think that's a society in whole. You can't have rights for some without having the right for everybody.
That interview was facilitated by Rose Arrieta and produced by Ashley Ann Krigbaum. For more information about StoryCorps and to learn how you can participate, visit our website, KALW.org. And now for some artery, cultural coverage that two-steps across Texas. This weekend, hundreds of people from across California and from as far away as Idaho, Oregon, and Washington State will be coming to Northern California to get a little taste of Texas. That's because this weekend is the 6th annual Tejano Conjunto Festival in Sacramento, a celebration of Latino music from Texas that made its way across the West. Julie Kane and Lisa Morehouse visited a band playing the festival and bring us this preview.
The Gloria family, cousins, aunts, and uncles, is sitting around a kitchen table in Modesto, doing what they always do, playing music together.
Yo fui el hermano que la maté.
30-year-old accordionist Albert Gloria remembers being a kid and watching his uncle Beto's band practice in the garage across the street.
Instead of running around playing tag, I wouldn't even play. I would just watch them.
This band is called Texas Funk, and they play at clubs and parties around Modesto. It's made up of three generations of musicians. The younger ones were born in California, the older ones in Texas. The music they play is called Tejano Conjunto. Tejano is the Spanish word for Texan. Conjunto means ensemble. The music is a blend of Mexican ballads and German polkas brought together in Texas in the late 1800s. The accordion is the star instrument, and it's joined by bass, drums, and a 12-string guitar called a bajo sexto. The lyrics often tell sad tales of broken hearts and forbidden love, but the rhythm is made for dancing. Like the older generation of the Gloria family, many early Tejano Conjunto musicians and their relatives were migrant farm workers.
My first job was picking cotton at the age of 5.
That's Ramona Landeros, who today organizes the Tejano Conjunto Festival. She grew up in the 1960s without child labor protections.
I remember reaching into the bud of the cotton plant, and my hand was so small that it would fit perfectly.
Originally from Texas, her family traveled across the West, working in fields and living in migrant labor camps under terrible conditions. She says their music made life bearable.
Dad used to say, la música que te trae de la muerte. In other words, that music that would bring you back from the dead. After a long day's work and you feel dead, and then when they'd bust out the accordions, the guitars, the bajo sextos, everybody would be outside listening to the music. Before you know it, they'd start, you know, people start kicking up dust, dancing.
These Tejano migrants brought their music with them as they traveled, which is how it came to California.
I just thought, God, it'd be nice to have something out here because I know so many Tejanos in Oregon, in Washington, in Idaho, all the places that I've been. And that we've worked, I knew there was always Tejanos that ended up staying in those places. And I thought, well, if I was to organize a festival here in Sacramento, I'll bet people would come.
And she was right. Now, in its sixth year, the festival's grown to 3 days. It attracts people from all across the West, keeping the music alive far from its roots. Songs get passed down from generation to generation, learned by ear rather than by sheet music. Younger players add their own touches to old standards, keeping the music vibrant. Back at their kitchen table, Albert and Robert Gloria play a classic polka by Tony de la Rosa. And here's their new version with lots of Texas funk. But Tejano music isn't just played around kitchen tables. It's a major genre with a Grammy category and its own pantheon of stars. One of them, Flaco Jimenez, is headlining this weekend's Tejano Conjunto Festival.
Ya me voy, ahí te dejo en San Antonio. Tu mañita no te la puedo quitar.
This is probably the closest it gets to it being in Texas, where they have these happy events all the time.
Bass player Robert Gloria.
So Sacramento, they have the annual one every year. So people from other states, they can't make it to Texas. They come to California.
Janie Gloria Casucci, the singer for the group called Texas Funk, says they come because the Tejano identity is so strong. She spent most of her life in California, but she still calls herself Tejana.
Born Tejana, die Tejana. No, it just doesn't go away. Just because you moved to a different state, it's in your heart.
And you need heart to play this music, says her nephew Albert.
That's what we do this for, the love of the music. We want to do it to be famous. We want to be playing this style of music. You know, that's why we do it, to keep the tradition going and the love of the music that we've been taught from our parents and uncles and aunts and everybody.
For Cross Currents, I'm Lisa Morehouse.
That story was co-reported by Julie Kane. The Tejano Conjunto Festival runs through Sunday in Sacramento. Texas Funk plays the closing party. More information is at klw.org. That's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Emily Gaddick, Nina Gensler-Debs, Erica Moo, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Anna Sterling. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. You're listening to Alexis Hart and the Lemon Hammer. They play folk and blues, and they're taking the stage of the 60th Annual Sausalito Art Festival on Monday, that's Labor Day, at 11:15 a.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
It's almost 3 a.m. and I'm staring at the wall. My chest is pounding and my heart is the wrecking ball. After 30 days, 13 nights, and 6 months parole, Lord knows I have my share of worries to console. Such a sweet, sweet blue.